Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There's no question the United States is going through a rough patch. And it isn't going unnoticed by North Carolina voters. A recent Catawba College YouGov poll indicates North Carolinians are pessimistic about our country's political future, but they are strongly united in support of constitutional checks and balances, and they oppose presidential overreach. Three-quarters of those surveyed say these opinions will likely guide their choices in the next election. This might serve as a warning shot to politicians. Meanwhile, confidence in the nation's highest court is disquieting. As many as 56% said they had not very much or no confidence at all in the court, but still believe their rulings should be respected. Today, we dive a little deeper into those findings and what they may mean for the future of American democracy and the midterm elections, and how the roadmap being followed by the administration set out in Project 2025 may be backfiring. Michael Bitzer is professor of politics and history and director of the Center for North Carolina Politics and Public Service at Catawba College. He produced the latest Catawba College YouGov poll, and he joins us along with David Graham, a staff writer for The Atlantic and author of the book The Project, How Project 2025 is Reshaping America. Welcome back to you both. Good morning.
Good to be with you.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Michael, I'm going to start with you because it's your survey. When did you put this survey in the field? And given the support given to Donald Trump, who has been pushing the boundaries of presidential power here? Did the results of all this surprise you?
So we went out into the field in mid-March, took a little over a week to get about 1,000 weighted respondents, which is what we typically do. And I wasn't surprised by the pessimism, particularly when it comes to the political environment and what people think about the future of our politics and the climate that we're in. You know, we're in a very divided time period. It is partisanship almost on steroids. It's polarization. It's not just ideological division, but it's also what we call affective polarization, that the both sides are growing more and more intensity in terms of dislike towards each other. And that has really shown up, I think, over the past year that we've been doing these polls, in that you see Democrats on one side of a political issue, you see Republicans on the exact opposite, and oftentimes the independents, the folks in the middle, are the bridge between the two. Now, sometimes independents will move more on one side over the other, but I think this survey really kind of focused on the environment and then what would happen in a kind of hypothetical situation that we test the bounds of constitutional governance and authority. That's what we really wanted to try and get into and tap into.
Well, given the fact that almost every day we hear news reports of those boundaries being tested in some way or another, why be hypothetical about it?
Well, we wanted to present, you know, in a situation and not necessarily have direct partisan influence, because we know when we include one name, Donald Trump, into a question, it just drives the partisan dynamics even further. So we did a randomized kind of scenario where it didn't matter what you identified with, you had about a 50-50 chance of landing on the Democratic president doing this kind of scenario or a Republican president landing in this kind of scenario. And that was the experiment that we wanted to run to see, okay, taking names out of the picture, we're just dealing with the institutions of government, the presidency, Congress, and particularly the courts. And so we wanted this kind of, as base neutral dynamic that we could get in public opinion polling to be the ground for which we're looking at these kinds of issues.
Do you think people were able to do that? Do you think when you ask a hypothetical question, which is about pushing the boundaries of constitutionality, that they can remove the name Donald Trump or the name Joe Biden from that question?
Or more importantly, their own partisan identification.
Yeah.
And I think what we found in this survey was, depending on how you view the political climate, if you are positive about the future of American politics and the political climate, you tended to be a little more forgiving to presidential defiance of a court order. However, if you see things negatively moving forward with our politics, you tended to say, I want constitutional guardrails. I want Congress to act. I want the presidential defiance to be met with a check and balance system. So in this kind of context, partisanship drives so much of what we know, but it's also the kind of context and what people are thinking about that really plays a major influence in all of this.
Did any of the results of this survey surprise you? Did it give you hope? Did it drive you to despair?
I tend to look at these things as kind of just trying to understand it as best as I can. And I think what really surprised me was that among Republicans who view the political climate negatively, they do see the importance of constitutional checks and balances. That they say, if a president defies a Supreme Court ruling, Congress needs to hold him to account.
And David Graham's with us from The Atlantic. You're an expert on Project 2025, and many of the, this is not a hypothetical, many of the things going on in Washington today are because they are rolling out the plan as stated in Project 2025 as quickly as possible before they may or may not lose the House and Senate in the midterms, when all of that will likely be met with serious objections. So when you look at the results of this survey, which I believe you have looked at, did anything surprise you? Did anything give you hope?
I think one of the things that's so striking to pick up from what Michael was just saying is that a plurality of Republican voters in this poll, 47%, are pessimistic about the direction of politics. They don't think, they have a negative view of politics today. So what you see is across the board, you see Americans who are really unhappy with the state of things. And, there's a lot of complexity in those sorts of results. Why they think things are not going well may vary, but I think that's a really striking result. I'm also was heartened by a lot of these results. I think it's great to see this kind of support for norms and checks and balances. I would say it's kind of remarkable in some places, for example, to see that roughly two-thirds think that a president defying the Supreme Court would be a threat to democracy. If that is not a threat to democracy, one wonders what it would take for people to feel more threatened. But I think generally you can see the worry and pessimism across these results.
Maybe you can't answer this question, David, because you can't get into the minds of the survey respondents. But when they say they are pessimistic about our political future, what do you think they mean by that?
I think you have a range of views. People are obviously looking at the state of Congress. And in this poll, we see frustration with Congress's inability to act. They're looking at rising prices. They're looking at gridlock. They're looking at bad vibes, to put it bluntly, across the board. They're dissatisfied with the president, as we're seeing in national polls. I think there are also some people who feel that, Trump is being held back and not able to do the things that he ought to be able to do. So you see frustration of that variety. Voters are complex. But I think the polls, this poll and other polls, paint a picture of what is frustrating them.
Michael, same question to you. When they talk about being pessimistic about our political future, what does that mean? Pessimistic for the future of the country, our ability to stay the United States of America? Are we going on the verge of another civil war? I mean, what are they saying?
We didn't dig that deep. Maybe that's for another poll that will run later this year. But I think David's right. I mean, the complexity of what we're seeing in our politics is oftentimes based on where you fall in terms of the political spectrum. I think certainly Democrats, by just looking at presidential approval, or more importantly for them, presidential disapproval, it's all about Donald Trump. And they see him in really stark terms. And I think that that drives so much of their dynamics. What will be interesting to see is after this November's midterm elections, where do things shift? If there is any kind of movement, if the Democrats take over, let's say, the House of Representatives, or probably, as a really good night, they take over both the Senate and the House. Do things shift in that regard, or does the intensity of the fight between Congress and the president escalate even more? I think on the Republican side, they are very much still locked in step behind the president, but they are thinking more broadly about some of the constitutional dynamics at play. It doesn't matter which party controls the White House or Congress, there are some basic guardrails. There are some basic fundamentals within built into our system that is inherently conflictual, but it happens to both sides when the other party wins. And so, if you're willing to say the president can defy Congress or the courts, even under a Republican president, do you say the same thing with a Democratic president? And that's kind of it may be a subtle dynamic at play, but that's that ambition checking ambition, no matter who's in control.
And David, that's what Democratic pundits have been saying on these television shows for a couple of years now. Just imagine Joe Biden doing these things. Just imagine Barack Obama doing some of the things that Donald Trump is doing. The Republicans would be apoplectic. Are they wrong?
I think it's hard to say. I think there's a real value to asking hypothetical questions like this for all the reasons that Michael lays out. But I also think that once you put a situation in the real world, you don't know how people will react. Once you have a real situation, you have media establishments on both sides rallying their troops around it. And so what is a sort of abstract question of principle suddenly becomes a messy question of politics. But I suspect that they are right. I mean, these things cut both ways, and you have both parties flipping. The one other thing I'd say is if North Carolinians are pessimistic about national politics, I think it may be in part because we have seen kind of where the nation is going. We have consistently been ahead of the curve on, whether it is supercharged gerrymandering or election denial or fights in the courts. These are things that we have all seen. And so we maybe have a better sense than a lot of people of where the country might be headed.
So, Michael, we've been talking for years on and off on this program about gridlock and how that frustrates voters because they look at the government and they think nothing can get done because the two sides are at loggerheads all of the time. This is where this poll sparked my interest because it says you found that two-thirds of North Carolinians said it was more important to maintain the system of checks and balances, even if it makes it harder to get things done. Nothing gets done in gridlock. So, did that answer surprise you? I mean, the Congress has done virtually nothing except a very few things in the last 2 years. So.
I would say if a student asked me that question, I would say the system is working. The system was designed around conflict. The system has imposed a sense of compromise. If you don't want to get anything done, if you don't want to compromise, conflict is going to be there and the system is going to play itself out. And I think what was you had asked earlier what was something that maybe was reassuring. I think that that answer in and of itself, that people recognize that the system is built around conflict, they are willing to sacrifice getting something done.
We will explore more of people's opinions as reflected in this Catawba College YouGov poll when we come back with Michael Bitzer and David Graham. David's from The Atlantic. Michael Bitzer's from Catawba College at Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about a survey conducted by the Catawba College folks. It was a Catawba College YouGov poll on, I guess the state of America and politics and what people think about the balance of power and the separation of powers, etc. Dr. Michael Bitzer is the person who fielded that poll. He's a professor of politics and history and the director of the Center for NC Politics and Public Service at Catawba College. David Graham is also with us, a staff writer for The Atlantic and author of The Project, How Project 2025 is Reshaping America. Your survey, Michael, reveals that when it comes to who has the final authority in interpreting the Constitution or what the Constitution means, a plurality, 41%, said it should be the Supreme Court of the United States. 41% have they read the Constitution, while another third said that all three branches should share that authority. And therein lies the rub that we find ourselves in today. Does this show a lack of understanding of how the Constitution is intends for the country to be run, how the Founding Fathers set it up in the first place?
So here comes the political scientist. I would say both answers are somewhat correct in that what we oftentimes think popularly is the idea, well, Congress is exclusively the lawmakers and the executive is the chief enforcer, the chief executive, and they are the ones that execute the law. And the courts are the ones that interpret the law. Well, actually, all three branches share those three governing powers with each other. Oftentimes, sometimes Congress will write a law and says, this is how the executive is going to execute the law. And then the president will sign these things called executive orders. And that's kind of a semi way of lawmaking. And then you've got the court saying, well, you misinterpreted this law, so you need to execute it this way. And so there's this dynamic at play that really all three governing powers and authorities get shared by all these three different branches. And so, yes, the courts are oftentimes looked at as the final arbiter of what the Constitution means, but Congress can rewrite a law to say, you know what, this is how we interpret these words to mean. And the president can do the same thing oftentimes with these things called signing statements. This is how I'm going to interpret this law that Congress passed, but I think it broaches on my constitutional authority to execute, so I'm going to do things the way I want to. So, you know, to me, 74% of North Carolinians having some sense of, yeah, the plurality go to the court in terms of interpretation, but all three, a third, say that all three branches share this power. That to me is pretty remarkable.
David, both sides of this political bifurcation want different things out of the government, quite clearly. And supporters of Donald Trump, specifically those who participated in the construction of Project 2025, which they are now implementing, believe in this thing called the unitary executive, where the executive power invested in the president has all the power to control the executive branch and execute things the way they see fit, with or without congressional approval, in broad terms. Was the prospect of that perhaps initially attractive to supporters because they thought it would break gridlock, or because they truly believe in this unitary executive theory as laid out in Project 2025?
I think there's a little bit of both. One thing that you hear from the authors of Project 2025 is a real critique of Congress, that Congress, they feel, can't get things done. And more than that, has often sort of yielded its power up to the executive for the last several decades, you know, whether that's not passing budgets or delegating a lot of authority to the administration. You know, war making is a great example of this, but there are plenty of them. And I think there's a frustration that Congress has already yielded these things up, so the president might as well take it. And there's also a sense that these things need to get done. And so I think it's striking reading the Catawba YouGov results here to see so many North Carolinians saying that they want Congress to be a check on the president, when we've seen the administration, you know, working around Congress repeatedly. bullying Congress around picks, trying to avoid confirmation. Most importantly, I think attempting to impound funds, so not spending money that Congress has allocated. These are all priorities from Project 2025, and they're things that this poll suggests are not popular with voters.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because this poll reflects opinions among North Carolinians on the importance of the system of checks and balances that we all learned about in the social studies class. So does that mean, and we can assume that we're not in this bubble in North Carolina, or only we believe that. I'm sure that we could extrapolate this out to the country at large. So does that mean that the people who designed Project 2025 have miscalculated? Does it mean that the Trump administration, in riding roughshod over Congress, has miscalculated?
Well, at the risk of chauvinism, North Carolinians may, in fact, be more wiser than voters in some places. I think, voters here are probably a good proxy for the country.
You're just
though.
Saying that.
I think many of the things that the administration has pursued, and particularly those in Project 2025, are born out of a sense of necessity and a sort of apocalyptic view. And I think they understood that many of them would be unpopular with voters, and they felt it was important to get them done quickly and sort of, with shocking speed, overriding Congress, for example, in order to make them happen before voters and courts as well could react and do something about it, because they feel these things are so important. But I think, the voter backlash we're seeing is kind of inevitable. Even during the 2024 campaign, the Heritage Foundation's own polling found that Project 2025 was deeply unpopular with voters. That was in a hypothetical sense, and now we see that in practice, it is also unpopular with voters.
So, Michael, when you break down the responses indicating high support for checks and balances, you find that 59% of Republicans supported these divided powers. 68% of independents were also supporters, with, not surprisingly, 79% of Democrats in that camp. That's a 20% spread between Democrats and Republicans, 79-59. Can you explain that?
It is a pattern that we have seen time and time again, oftentimes in our polling. But I would look to that Republican number and really be concentrating on that, because basically what that tells me is that 6 out of 10 Republicans, with a Republican controlling the executive branch in the White House, they still feel that it's important for a fundamental checks and balance system to be operating, even though things may not get done. And I think that that really shows, within a political dynamic of deep division, there is agreement. There is, some understanding of how this system works, whether they got civics education in high school or in college or not. They understand the basic fundamental building block of our governing system.
David.
I'm torn on that. I think on the one hand, it is true that that is a strong number. I think it is also the case that even when these questions are posed as hypotheticals, Republican voters are unable to, they are aware that the president is a Republican and that checks and balances mean restraining a president who they probably supported in the last election and whose policies they would like to see enacted. That said, I think a 20-point spread like that is worrisome. That's a big difference between the policies on something that's pretty fundamental.
Well, this is something else that struck me. You've got 60% of Republicans, approximately 60% of Republicans, supporting checks and balances. 70% of independents, 80% of Democrats. I'm curious as to why it's not 100%. We're about to celebrate the 250th birthday of this country, and we've been all raised to understand the system of checks and balances, and it seems to have worked for us over the last 250 years. Why isn't support at 100% for the system that operates the country? Michael,
this is maybe a political science question for Michael, but there has always been a portion of the American population that is not actually all that democratic, that is patriotic in the sense of supporting the U.S. They feel a allegiance to the flag, but their commitment to democracy is actually fairly shallow, and I think that's true in a lot of democracies. So although I would prefer to see it at 100, I'm not surprised that it's not 100.
Well, then, Michael, expand on that, because what is patriotism about? What is flag waving about if it's not about the Constitution and the principles that have been the defining moments of American politics and society?
We would like to think that we all agree on the basic fundamentals of American values and American ideals. That is not the case. And we will see people thinking that there are better systems out there that like the more strongman approach to governance. We have created
are they patriots under the purest sense of the word?
I will leave that to them to justify it. I can't understand it. As somebody who studies this on an hourly, if not daily basis, I understand that we have the most inefficient form of government for a reason. And the reason is because we don't trust human beings. We are concerned about human behavior. And if you get power, you want more power, and you're going to abuse that power. And when I see poll results like this, and particularly if you look even deeper, those who voted for Donald Trump, almost 60% of them said it's important to maintain checks and balances, even if it makes things harder. Only a quarter of Trump voters said, no, we need government to act quickly and decisively. That's more dictatorial. That's more strongman authoritarianism. So something is in our American psyche, but you're not going to get 100% agreement on it.
So, David, the majority of the respondents to this survey believe in the Constitution. That's one thing we can take away from this. And they say that no one is above it. In other words, they view the Constitution as the law of the land. And this administration has been described by some pundits as being lawless. Well, they certainly push the law to its very limits. They test constitutional boundaries almost on an hourly basis. If our normal system of checks and balances has failed us as Congress sits silently watching these actions, does this survey indicate that that may be a foolish formula to follow? Will voters likely be the check and balance? Will voters likely be the check and balance to presidential overreach?
I mean, I think voters are the fundamental backstop. And where the system has failed, it's a question of is the system failed, or is it a failure of the actors in the system? Is it, for example, a failure of members of Congress to be a more independent branch, to serve an oversight and accountability function? I think this poll suggests many voters feel that way. It certainly seems to be the case that the Speaker of the House views his role as enacting the Trump agenda, and that's not how the system is laid out. The courts, I think, have been very divided, and you can see clear partisan lines between who appointed some federal judges and the sorts of rulings we're getting. But in that situation, I think voters are the final check, with the caveat that, that requires voters to be able to have an essentially free and fair choice. And I'm thinking of last night's special election in Virginia, where there was a vote on a gerrymandering referendum. These things are specifically to kind of work around the will of the voters, or to meld the will of the voters to politicians' will. And in that vote, we saw that our neighbors to the north, narrowly supported a gerrymandering referendum, but in a heavily Democratic cycle, they more narrowly supported it than they voted for the Democratic governor last year. And I think that's a sign also of the kind of residual support for checks and balances and reluctance to override them that we're seeing here.
Go ahead, Michael.
If I could insert, last June, we did another survey that asked a lot of the governing principles, things that we're talking about, the importance of open and free and fair elections. We asked the question, how important is it that when the president exercises authority, it must be within the limits of the Constitution, no matter what they individually believe the law is? 89% of North Carolinians said that that was an important concept. 89% of Republicans said it was an important concept. So people get the principles, they get the theory, they get the conceptualization of our system. When you impose the kind of real-world scenarios, that's when things tend to break down because then you get, well, my guy is in power right now. Do I really want to give them the kind of authority that they could abuse, or do I want them to be checked at some point? And I think that that's where we're trying to find where this undergirding of American political philosophy is.
Yeah, because despite the results of your survey and despite what happened in Virginia last night, voters looked at what happened during the first Trump administration, where he broke the law more than once, where he pushed the limits of the law more than once. When he left the White House, he took documents with him, which was illegal. And he said that he was perfectly within his rights. He allegedly incited a riot at the Capitol to maintain power in 2020. And yet, after all of that, with a 4-year interval, voters returned him to the White House. So I ask again, David, will voters likely be the checks and balances on presidential overreach and/or lawbreaking, or will they just turn a blind eye because he's my guy?
You know, in the 2020 election, Trump lost by a convincing margin. It wasn't a particularly close election. And I think that's a sign of voter frustration with the way the first Trump administration went. I think his election in 2024, I would hesitate to call it a fluke, but every election comes in a specific context. And the context there is widespread voter frustration with the incumbent, sense of not being sold on the process by which Kamala Harris was chosen as a Democratic nominee, widespread frustration about the economy. I think, you know, given Trump's record in the first term, the 2024 election raises some serious questions. But I think we have seen voters react against what the administration is doing multiple times, whether that's the 2018 election, the 2020 election, even the 22 election. It was a kind of a referendum on Trump. And I think the election in November is going to serve largely as a referendum on Trump, too. And we see the polls suggest that Trump's party will suffer.
Trump signaled his intent to bypass both Congress and the courts following adverse rulings, but he hasn't taken many actions. He's tried to slow things down and thwart those rulings, but he hasn't deliberately said, "Nope, I'm not going to do that." If he did, you don't have time to answer this, so think about it over the break. If he did, would that be viewed by these voters as a constitutional crisis, or would it just be viewed as, "That's what I elected him to do"? That's what I elected him to do. We'll get an answer to that from one of these guys when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Michael Bitzer is with us. Dr. Michael Bitzer is professor of politics and history and director of the Center for North Carolina Politics and Public Service, where they conduct the Catawba College YouGov poll, which recently came out, which we've been talking about this hour. David Graham is also with us. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic and the author of The Project, How Project 2025 is Reshaping America. We were talking before the break about how the Trump administration has pushed the boundaries of the law. They've tested things. Quite often, what they're trying to do is knock down by the courts. And thus far, the day is young. He has not said, "Absolutely not. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what I want to do. And to heck with you," which would create, I would think, a constitutional crisis. But he's found ways to slow things down. He's found ways to go around things only to be knocked down again. And he'll find another way to get around it. So, is this a, would people who responded to this survey and said we believe in the separation of powers and we believe that the Supreme Court is the final word, would they believe, David and Michael, that this would be a constitutional crisis? Michael, you opened your mouth, so I'll let you talk first.
So I think one of the questions that we pose really hits to this, and we're talking about hypotheticals here. This is going to be the reality that if Donald Trump refuses or defies, let's say, a Supreme Court order, we ask the question, how serious of a threat is that going to be? And two-thirds of North Carolinians said it was a serious threat to American democracy. Almost 6 out of 10 Republicans said it would be a serious threat. Over 8 out of 10 Democrats said it would be a serious threat. Now, when reality hits, that's going to be the true test of our system and how much response people will see this or revert to their partisan corners. I don't know how that's going to play out. Nobody does. But if we have a baseline of what we know with this survey, we've got something to then say when the blank hits the fan, this is what we should expect.
So, David, I'll give you a chance to answer that same question, but since you're the expert here on Project 2025, do you think that they intend for it to go that far, or they're just willing to test the boundaries and find ways around rulings?
It seems like there is some difference of opinion on that in the administration. You know, Trump himself has said he would not defy the Supreme Court, which, you know, like many things Trump says, is worth the pixels it's conveyed in. But, you know, Vice President J.D. Vance, for example, has been much more open to the possibility of defying the Supreme Court. This week, we see the administration setting up a system to refund tariff monies that they took in. That's something the administration said they couldn't and wouldn't do, and they are now doing it. So that's a good sign. I think it's really interesting to see, you know, in the Department of kind of people's allegiance to norms in an abstract sense. Here we have people saying in this poll that the Supreme Court should be the final authority, even as 56% of them lack confidence in the Supreme Court. So it is, I think that is really interesting. And I think it's in a kind of twisted way, that's encouraging that people, even though they don't like the court as currently acting, believe that it's important that there be that check and balance. The second half of that is we would be in a much better situation if many more Americans and many more North Carolinians did in fact have confidence in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, your survey, Michael, says that North Carolinians indicate that when it comes to who has the final authority in interpreting the Constitution, 41% said that power resides in the Supreme Court. That's a plurality. Yeah. It's not a majority. Oh. Yet 56% of respondents told you that they had not very much confidence or no confidence at all in the court. At the same time, a similar recent survey by NBC News shows only 22% of registered voters have a great deal or quite a bit of confidence in the court. That's down from 29% in 2022. This is a lot of numbers, but they seem to agree it's the lowest share of voters with confidence in the high court since NBC began taking those numbers in 2000. Are these polls reflecting similar sentiment by voters across the country? And if so, what's driving it?
I think they are, and I think the Supreme Court, even though we perceive them to be nonpartisan, they have become and are partisan actors. They are partisan actors in robes. They say at their confirmation hearings, I'm just a referee, I'm calling balls and strikes, but they have political perspectives that shape how they view the law and how they interpret the law. And I think that, you know, in this day and age, I'm not surprised that the Supreme Court is seen in this light. The partisan division is there when you talk about confidence in the courts. I think that's just a natural component of where we are as a society.
So between that and some of the moves being made, David, by the Trump administration, it seems like we're eating our young. These moves have created an erosion of confidence in the system that seems to be borne out in the results of Michael's survey, indicating great pessimism, as we've talked about, in the political future of the country. Is that a bug or a feature of Trump's approach and of what's in Project 2025? A realignment of everything.
Well, I mean, it's tough to say. I think that both things like Project 2025 and the Trump phenomenon are both born out of pessimism. You know, there's a sense among some voters that things are not working and they're willing to try ideas that they would previously have ruled out. There are some voters who are, you know, what my colleague Derek Thompson has called the burn it all down voters, who don't really care as long as, you know, the system isn't working, we might as well trash it. But I also think that once a politician gets in office, they have to deliver. And what people are seeing from the Trump administration is they're not liking it based on the polling we're seeing. So it drives some of that pessimism further. I think what these things point to is we need some sort of movement that is going to create more optimism and confidence. You know, something maybe comparable to the post-Watergate reforms that would reinstill some sense that government is working for the people and can do what the people wants. And that means not just the presidency, it means Congress, which again has been sort of atrophied, and it means the Supreme Court.
And one area that Trump seems to be obsessed with is our elections and our elections process. He continues to dote on the 2020 election outcome and the people involved in what he sees as a fixed election. He wants more federal control over elections at the state and local level. He's had his Justice Department request voter records from some states, all of this in advance of the midterms, after which the GOP control of Congress is likely to be weakened and perhaps ended, depending upon what happens in the Senate. You have written about Trump's plans for the midterm elections, which at one time brought speculation that he might declare a national emergency. We do have this war going on. A national emergency and take over all aspects of elections. And his latest executive order calls for his Department of Homeland Security to work with the Social Security Administration to create a nationwide database of voting age citizens and share that with every state. Is that constitutional?
Experts almost unanimously agree that it is not. And you can find people who are more aligned with Trump who will say it is. But consistently, there's a sense that this is simply not a possibility. You know, the government cannot force states to do the things it's seeking it to do. It's also impractical, I think. It's hard to imagine this would be workable, especially on the timeline we have until the November elections. This would be unlikely to happen that fast. And the third thing I'd say is, as much as this order appears to be unconstitutional and impractical, it is far scaled down from drafts that were circulating in the last couple months, which suggested a much more drastic national takeover. So I think there is a sense that, there's only so much they can push and that voters are reacting against the kind of things they're doing. So we can see that backlash in action already.
Michael, did you want to jump in here?
Yeah, we actually asked a question about this in a previous release. We asked, would you support or oppose the federal government taking over election administration and vote counting? And we asked two questions, one on in other certain states, so outside of North Carolina. Only 27% of respondents were supportive of the federal government taking over. 47% were opposed. We asked a second question, well, would you support the federal government taking over North Carolina's elections and vote counting? And remember, North Carolina is under a Republican overseeing our election administration agency. Again, 25% said they would support it, and that was driven primarily by Republicans. So there's this dynamic at play when it comes to who's got constitutional authority. The time, place, and manner clause to the U.S. Constitution says very clearly, unless Congress intercedes, it is the state's responsibility. And that is another check and balance dynamic at play.
I want to take a brief pause from the pessimism, because we're going to come back to that in a second, and dwell for a moment on something optimistic, because David, you recently wrote that Viktor Orban's recent defeat in Hungary shows, quote, the competitive authoritarian playbook that Trump has imitated can be beaten. Given what you've already said about the likely unconstitutionality of current and previous moves on elections, are we fretting too much over nothing?
I think it varies from person to person. Some of us are, and some of us are probably not fretting enough. But I do think there are signs of resilience. We see that even in a situation like Hungary, where a ruler has control over a lot of the media establishment and makes things very difficult for the opposition party to run, uses prosecutions and other methods to try to push them out. All of these things that we're starting to see in this country, we still see that a broad-based opposition can, in fact, defeat a government like that. And I think when you look at a result like that, when you look at the support for checks and balances we see in this poll, there are reasons to believe that American voters can, in fact, push back against these things. It is not a foregone conclusion. It is not easy. But I think despair is not called for at this moment.
As you look at media consolidation, as you look at what's happening at CBS, as you look at how the defunding of public broadcasting, as you look at some of the capitulation from universities and even law firms over demands from the Trump administration, do you think we're too far down the road for voters to have an impact? Have we already lost control?
One thing that I see from the sort of consolidation or from the surrender by these law firms is that these institutions are much flimsier than I realized and maybe than some people thought. They were kind of bulwarks of opposition to Trump in the first term, but that turned out not to be born out of deep feeling. It seems to have been mostly exigence and a sense that he was a passing phenomenon. But time and again, I think voters have been more solid than the institutions. They are more reliable. They have a deeper allegiance to these things. And as voters, you know, their responsibility is the Constitution in a way that a law firm or a university has other equities that it has to consider. So that, you know, that gives me some hope that we're going to see people voting against sort of authoritarian or light authoritarian movements in November.
So, Michael, getting back to pessimism, the majority of respondents in your poll, 56%, believe the future of the United States political climate is negative. Only 18% believe we have a positive future. What does that mean? And how would that compare, if you have figures on it, to previous polls in years gone by?
I think the pessimism is certainly there. I think this is going to be a challenging year on all sides. I want to insert a little hope, a little optimism. Sorry to do that, to burst the bubble, but last August, we asked about the U.S. Constitution. We asked the question, overall, how satisfied are you with the Constitution as a governing document for the United States? 70% said that they were satisfied. Only 10% were dissatisfied. So even in this context, even in this negative environment, people look to the basic fundamental structure. And I have to remind folks, the beginning of the Constitution is not Article 1, it's the preamble. And it says, we the people. And oftentimes, we the people have a better understanding than we oftentimes may give them credit for. Yes, they are negative, but they see the resolve and the importance of the governing structure, and they're saying, we're going to protect it. It's up to us.
You say the poll found that among those who voted for Donald Trump in 2024, one-third were positive about the future of the nation's political climate. 47% were negative. Among Kamala Harris voters, 73% were negative. Only 9% had positive feelings about the future, which is understandable among sure. Harris supporters. But when you factor in the feelings about the future under Trump, does that fit in with his dropping poll numbers nationwide?
I think that there could be a potential there. Yeah. I don't know the relationship between those two numbers. I'm happy to look at that. But I think that there is something there, that maybe the bounds have been pushed so far that even those folks who identify as Republicans are saying, whoa, wait a minute, I didn't necessarily sign up for this.
So as these numbers come out here and in other polls around the country, David, are the people who created Project 2025, the people trying to make it happen, are they beginning to understand that perhaps their ideas are on the fringe and not in the mainstream, or do they care?
I don't think they care. I mean, I think there's a sense that they believe this is what's necessary for the country. And it's up to voters to decide whether they agree with that or whether they want to push back on that vision.
So, Michael, what does this leave you with? As a pollster, and you read the results and you study these results, so how does it leave you? What does it make you feel? I have 15 seconds.
If North Carolina is representative of the country, we may be okay moving forward. We're going to have tough times, but we could be okay.
Michael Bitzer is professor of politics and history and director for the Center for North Carolina Politics and Public Service at Catawba College and the conductor of the Catawba YouGov poll. And David Graham joined us again, staff writer for The Atlantic and author of The Project, How Project 2025 is Reshaping America. Thank you both for the hour. I'm putting away sharp objects now.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.